to GalacticConnection.com, one of the most popular blogs on the World Wide Web today for alternative news. Stay tuned for the latest information on our world shift from enslavement to galactic involvement, as well as current intel on any blockages impeding us from our sovereign birthright. Knowledge and self-mastery are key at this time. Our commitment is to present you with the latest breaking conspiratorial articles, off-world messages, exopolitics, cutting-edge technologies and sciences, and also an ever-significant intertwining of spiritual support and metaphysical scope that one needs to dive down the rabbit hole and search for truth with balance. We are truly on the horizon of a new golden age filled with the promise for more love, worldwide peace, and accelerated intuitive skills, where every living being can exist in cohesion and abundance. It is whatever we envision and dream this new world to be. I say to you now, let's redefine the new world to the beginnings of our own precious heaven on Earth. Galactic Connection is here to provide the pulse of Mother Earth through an eclectic range of interviews each Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 4:55 p.m., Pacific Standard Time, Station 2 on BBS Radio, expanding your perspectives on how we can once and for all take back our freedoms, our joy, and our connection with our mighty I Am presence. Our intention remains true to connect hearts and minds everywhere in order to obtain global unity and galactic and universal acceptance. Our discussions will continue to cover anything to do with galactic society and our involvement with our galactic brothers and sisters. Our guests are experts in their fields, and our radio shows have been coined as some of the most thought-provoking out there. In addition to our daily blog, which runs 365 days a year, we also offer a realm of healing services such as our world-renowned implant removal processes, our spiritual past life clearings, our galactic violet ray alchemy from Alexandra, who shares in the lineage of Merlin, and other cutting-edge healing technologies. Check our site out at galacticconnection.com now. Sending you a wave of light, love, and inspiration, and a personal hug and thank you for listening to our Galactic Connection radio show and visiting our blog today. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and this is a pre-recorded interview for September 13th, 2016. This is a very special occasion for me. This is the day that my father was born. He is no longer with us in the physical reality, but we always celebrated our birthdays together. Mine was on the 12th, and his is on the 13th. So a special day for me. Anyway, with that said, I really want to share something with all of you that I keep seeing all the time in the work that I do with the galactic essences and the healing sessions. And that is that there is just a profound sense of sadness and sorrow that I'm seeing all over the place in everybody's cases. And I just want everyone to ask themselves, does this feel like it's really your stuff? Because in many ways it's not. I mean, it is, but it's not. It's really more planetary. Sorry, that's my dog. And because of the fact that we've talked so much about all the abominations and the pain and the suffering and everything that's going on the planet, the fact that we're actually seeing it surface, we're really watching it play out. We're in our third eye and in our etheric body, we're really seeing the abominations of what one living being has horrifically done to another. And this is causing us to really have to process a lot of information, especially for those who do an incredible amount of behind the scenes work, such as myself and others. This is a pretty heavy load that we've been trying to sift through, process, forgive. And let me tell you, it's really, really crucially important that we do this sooner rather than later. If you're feeling an immense amount of sadness, discouragement, depression, just feeling really suffering and feeling just like a heartache for the planet, please take the time to release that as soon as possible, because we need this. We are literally releasing this for not only Mother Earth, but for all of us in the mass consciousness. And we're the ones that are the valve to let it go. So I just want to remind everyone that this is a really important time to take and give yourself permission to be okay with that and to forgive yourself if you feel that you've participated in any way in causing this pain and suffering in any of your other lifetimes. As far as I'm concerned, you know what? The days of having to really work through stuff and process and analyze and understand, I don't know about you, but we're at the end of this road. I think it's just get her done. So try to do your best and just release, release, release. Just command, call forth the divine father and mother, command and show and be dedicated to your intention to let this go. And this will really assist all of us, including the nature kingdom. Everybody's in this together, and it's not been a bed of roses, as you know. But we are getting to the end of this road, and there's been just a phenomenal amount of victory. And there's just so many cool things going on. So with that said, I did want to share with you who I'm going to be interviewing today, and that is Tolik. I'm not sure if everyone is familiar with him, but he does have quite a presence out on the internet. And Tolik is a human representative of the Andromeda Council, an intergalactic, interstellar, interdimensional governance and development body of aligned, benevolent star systems and planets of sentient, intelligent life for worlds in both the Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxies. He's been given the name Tolik on an Earth-based public persona name by five individuals with whom he regularly communicates, who are stationed on the primary Andromeda Council biosphere. There are presently 12 Andromeda Council biospheres stationed in the solar system, three of which are relatively close to planet Earth. Tolik's first conscious, fully awake contact as an adult in 1993 occurred, which was when his principal Andromeda Council contact person, the commander of the primary Andromeda Council biosphere, who, like Tolik, is originally from the planet Dakota in the Taygeta star system in the Pleiades. Tolik learned from this man that Tolik's soul origin was first birthed on the planet Dakota and the Genesis planet of Lakota, Dakota, Nakota, and many other Western Native American peoples. How cool is that? In late summer of the 1993, the same commander took Tolik on three closely clustered together but separate time travel trips, via an Andromeda Council scout craft back to the time of the 1840s. And he was reviewing the area of rural Kentucky and West Virginia to observe the family of four in their day-to-day life struggles. Tolik's Andromeda Council contact people indicate that they have been in communication with him in various methods all the way back to the time that he was five. So I think you'll find him very interesting, and you'll enjoy his warmth and kindness. So stay tuned. We've got lots to talk about. Take care.
Okay.
Hello, Tolik. Good to see you. I'm glad you found a place that you can chill out under the, I think you said it was under the umbrellas, right? With the blue skies?
I'm actually under a veranda outside of Panera Bread. And yes, it's wonderful.
Okay.
Shaded, quiet. Yes.
Good. And, you know, I was just telling him, as the audience is listening, I was just telling him that he stepped up because he went from Dunkin' Donuts to Panera Bread.
Yes. Big step up. Yes.
So anyway, yeah. Tolik, I would like you to introduce yourself to those that are not familiar with you and just kind of give them a little bit of a vibe as to how this all began for you.
Ah, okay.
Your involvement with the Andromeda Council. Like, I did talk a little bit about that in your intro to this interview.
Okay.
This may be something that gives people a more of an insight as to what your life has been like with this contact.
Sure. It all pretty much started in the late summer of 1993. And to provide a bit of backdrop, I was raised and educated in New England. People would consider me to be a white collar guy, suit, coat and tie. I worked in the healthcare software industry for a number of years. And after about, I don't know, 10 years or so traveling across the Northeast Corridor and across the country, I decided I needed a change of life. I was tired of the densely populated Northeast and being on the same highways quite often. And so I looked at a map, decided that I would move to either Colorado or Arizona. The greatest opportunities came in Arizona, and I moved to Tucson in the winter of 91. And shortly after that, I started to have some pretty amazing experiences. And I'll tell people categorically, first off, that where I chose to live, the first iteration of my experiences of many years in Tucson was basically due north, and like north, what they would call north-northwest of the center of Tucson, up against the Catalina Mountains.
Oh.
And I could sit back out there on almost any given Friday or Saturday night after having been out with my business partners or otherwise, and sit out on the back porch and watch little lights dance across the mountains all the time. There's always things going up, going on up over the Catalina Mountains. So it's one of those busy places for what people would call UFOs.
So no accident for you ending up in Tucson either.
No accident. And it's just to be clear, I had never had any conscious contact experiences before I moved to Tucson. I had no memories of conscious contact before I moved to Tucson. The doors of my life got blown open once I moved there. And the precursor to my first contact experience was about 4.5 months later, after having been in Tucson for that long and experiencing month after month, weekend after weekend of rain. And I told the people who I was meeting, I said, "You people lie. The weather is lousy." Since then, I experienced a lot of sunny, you know, beautiful, you know, 64, 65, 67, 71 degree winter days in Tucson. But that particular winter, it rained almost for like 4 months straight. And having left New England, I was a madman. I'm like, okay, there's no snow. Oh, yeah, it did snow a couple times, but there's rain everywhere. So on a Saturday morning, not knowing what to do, I picked up the local version of the Tucson Weekly. I flipped through the back. I'm like, there's got to be something I can go be entertained by. And I saw this little teeny ad in the far back part of this local rag called the Tucson Weekly. And so, headline, like MUFON. I had no idea what MUFON was. Are you somebody who might be interested in science fiction, Star Trek, interested in life in outer space, UFOs? Come to the monthly meeting of MUFON at the Wilmot Library. I went, that looks kind of cool. I think I'll go to that.
Oh, my God.
That's how it all – clueless. I was, if you will, a UFO ET virgin. No concept of anything.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah, I went to the, you know, hopped in the car. Well, I left my condo, ran through the rain, hopped in my car, drove down into town 20 minutes away and arrived at the library. And there were like 60 some odd people at this meeting. This place, this room was, it was held at the Wilmot Library in one of their side rooms. It was packed. So I got there on time to see them, listen to different speakers. And at the end of the local people speaking, as people were filing out, I chose to be one of the last people filing out. And there was a gentleman at the front who even today looks this way. He looks a lot like Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov, otherwise known as Lenin. It's just the way he looks.
Wow.
And he is his name is Roger Scheer, and his mom is June Scheer. He was in his 50s at the time. His mom was in her 70s. And they were collectively the state director and assistant state directors of MUFON, Pima County, Tucson, Arizona, which I learned during my conversation with him. And I introduced myself and I said, you know, this has been a fascinating meeting. Would you mind? I've got a couple questions. So about 12 minutes later, keep in mind, all these people have filed out. About 12 minutes later, he looked at me and said, I can see that this is going to take quite a while. Would you like to have a cup of coffee at, you know, a local, you know, Denny's or...
So we,
yeah, sure, why not? Well, yeah, I'm like I said, I was like a UFO ET virgin, and all this information was coming at me. I'm like, holy, I've got some questions. So we agreed to meet at a place called the Kuchen Dutch, and I'm still friends with Roger today, all these years later. And I think, if my memory serves correct, we sat and we talked for about 6.5 hours that first wow. that first time.
So were you able to able to get out of bed the next day because you just got hit with so much information and process it?
Oh, my head was spinning, that's for sure. A year and a few months later, in the late summer of 93, and I know I just jumped, but I was working. I was working stiff, suit coat and tie, corporate world, healthcare software industry. And I was sleeping. It was like, I don't know, about 4:15 in the morning. Yeah, 3:44, 3:45, something like that. You know, that magical time.
That's what I was going to say. That's a perfect time for them to show up.
Yeah, and I hear, much like you and I are talking on the phone right here, right now, I hear this voice, hey, get up. I'm like, what? You got to get up. And you got to get dressed and you got to go meet me. I'm like, oh man, do you know what time it is? Yes, I know what time it is. Now, I'm having this dialogue with this gentleman in my brain because I wasn't using the phone. He was speaking with me telepathically. And the strange thing is I recognize his voice right away. Now, I know through the course of your life and probably many of your listeners, you go through the course of your life and you get into your 40s or 50s and there are people whose voices you know because you went to college together or from your hometown, whatever.
Yes.
And you know immediately when you pick up the phone, that's who it is. Well, it was that kind of experience, except we were speaking telepathically.
Huh.
And so I said, you want me to do what? Yeah, I want you to get dressed, get in your vehicle, drive down the highway. I want you to pull off at the exit that's right off of I-10 for I-19, the San Javier Mission exit. There's going to be a dirt road off to the right. Go about a third of the mile into the desert, something like that, and you'll see me standing there by my craft. Yeah, okay, fine. All right. So I get up, you know, I'm like rubbing my face. I'm like, 4:00 a.m. Go to the bathroom, get dressed. Off I go. I traded in my black Nissan Maxima leather-loaded vehicle for a 1985 Ford Bronco beat-em-up. So I hopped in that thing, and I drove down the highway and took the exit and found the dirt road and pulled off into the desert. I come through this last little wash, and it's pretty flat out there, but there's this wash, and he came through, popped up over the side, and there he was. There's a silver craft, you know, what people would think to be sort of the Billy Meyer Pleiades kind of looking Beamship 2.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. 35 to 40 feet in diameter, sort of satin silver finish. And he's standing outside this thing. This guy's like 7'4" or 7'5". One piece jumpsuit, dark brown hair. He looked like a Native American, tall Native American. Dark brown hair pulled in the back of his head. So I hop on my Bronco, and I'm like, hey, good to see you. Long time no see. What the hell are you doing here? He's waving at me. He's like, would you please hurry up? You know, it's now like, I don't know, 4:15, 5:20 in the morning. And he's like, you know, some people are going to work today, and we don't necessarily want them to see, you know, my craft sitting here. We're not that far off the highway. Yeah, it's good to see you. He's like, will you please hurry up? So I went over, and he sort of puts his hand around my shoulder and says, come on, I got one of these little pills you got to take. Like, give me a pill? He said, yeah, we got to bump up your vibration because we're going to travel back in time. I went, okay, that seems plausible. Now, keep in mind, I had already had, you know, a year and a half of conversations with Roger and other people in the MUFON world and had learned about the reality of extraterrestrial life. I'm like, oh, okay, this seems kind of plausible. I know this guy's voice. I trust him. So I took what looked like a little blue NyQuil caplet. I probably had to go through some other process, but he literally, what he shared with me was that three-dimensional organic humans like you and I and most other people on this planet, we cannot travel through time unless we become a higher vibratory rate. We have to be bumped up at least to 4D.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm not able to give you all the technical explanations for it, but that's essentially the deal. Somehow, your matter, your molecular essence has to be transformed.
Makes sense.
I remember leaving the planet in his ship. The strange part was, I get inside and I'm really not a technology guy. I'm really all about people and personal growth. But I'm looking around, seeing some pretty amazing technology. I'm like, wow, this is kind of cool. And but how come the inside of this ship looks to be like 125 to 150 feet, but from the outside it looks to be 35 or 40 feet? And he just looks at me and he goes, not now. I'm like, okay. So off we go. And I remember leaving the planet's surface, but I don't remember traveling through space much. They basically, this was a scooter. This is essentially a scout craft.
Right.
So he keys in the coordinates, and we jump. We go from one point to the next. So I think the total trip from at that time was current day 1993, late August, USA. We jumped back to the 1840s, like 1844, 1845, in rural America, Western Virginia, Kentucky.
Amazing.
And we did that. Yeah, he picked me up. I took the same trip a total of 3 times over the course of about a week and a half. And during each trip, including the last one, we, of course, to use a contemporary term, we were cloaked so people couldn't see the ship. But we were hovering, if you will, let's call it 100 feet or so, 200 feet maybe, over this homestead out in the country. And we observed the activities of a family of four. Mom, 26 to 28 years old. Dad, 32 to 34 or 36, something like that. A son, 9 to 10 year old, and a daughter about 3 or 4. Blonde hair, little curls, just a cute little thing. And to bring closure to the story, during the third trip, we observed a fire in the barn. You know, like a lot of homesteads, they had a field, their own crops. They also had a little garden. They had a shed for tools and stuff, and they had a barn with hay and animals. And the daughter was playing, was in the barn playing with, I think it was a goat. And as little kids do, they play and then they get worn out. So I guess she laid down to take a nap. She died from smoke inhalation.
What?
In the barn fire. Yeah. And it was, I was like, this is awful.
you're wondering, why did you guys take me here just to see this, right?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly it. And I know I've told the story a lot of times, but essentially, and I did. I asked him that exact same question, and I said, this was difficult to watch, knowing that this little girl, and he loves his son, but this little girl is like the apple of his eye. And yes, he loves his wife dearly, but this little girl is like the joy in his life. And for him to lose his daughter like that was just traumatic for him. So I said, why? Why this experience? Out of all of the initial experiences I may or may not have with you as an adult, why this one? And he said, well, there are a few reasons. Again, this is all telepathy. He said, first of all, and this is the least important, physically, genetically, by DNA, the body that you have today, you're related to these people. Okay. Secondarily, you're seeing me in an organic form, but in my natural form, I don't have this dense, opaque, organic body. I look the same way, but I have a higher vibratory rate, a light body. And as such, as a mid to upper level, he was 4D at that time, as a mid to upper level 4D person, we don't experience death. We never experience death. And there are going to be some changes coming in the near future of your world. And in order for us to better understand you, we need I'm being redundant here, but we need to better understand what it is you go through when you experience the loss of someone that you love.
Interesting.
Because again, we don't experience death. Well, parenthetically, and I'm using approximations so Earth people can get a sense for what it's like to have a higher dimensional life. He said something like, the idea is, we're created and then we'll live 7,000-8,000 years, maybe 6,000 years as you would describe it, as a 4D person. And then at some point we go, I've had enough of these 4D experiences. I've certainly learned as much as I think I can learn as a 4D person. I and my wife or my family, we're going to choose to become fifth dimensional. And they all talk and agree and whoop, they bump themselves up. Or maybe a man and his wife or just by himself. But in any case, they literally just decide to make that change and then they do it. And if you were a 4D person watching a 4D person who made that decision, you would watch him or her seemingly dissolve in front of you. But they've not dissolved. They simply become transparent because they're vibrating at such a faster rate that you would no longer see them in your 4D form because he or she is now 5D.
That's a really good explanation. That's a really good explanation. I've never heard anybody articulate it that well.
Yeah, that's literally how it happens. And so he said, and then he also said, the other thing that is unique to you on planet Earth, you people are quite, and I'm using my words, but he said, you people are quite dramatic. And as a metaphor, let's say the scale of what we feel in terms of emotions would run from like 0 to 50. And again, I'm using metaphors and comparisons. If the totality of our emotional reach is 0 to 50, for them, it's kind of like 15-35.
Right.
They feel. They definitely have emotions. They definitely feel. But they don't have the breadth and depth and or the roller coaster ride of emotions that we do.
Right.
That you Earth humans are very, very emotional. And if we are going to be able to help you through this coming transition and transformation that you're going to be making as a planet, it's incumbent upon us to really learn about you and how you tick.
Interesting.
And since we know you, Tolek, and you know us after many years of working together, blah, 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 the best thing we can do and the easiest thing we can do is observe you, observe your reactions as at least a Western society-based male human. Because there are others of them that are responsible for, India. And there are other people that are responsible for Africa, other people responsible for Eastern European.
Yes.
He's responsible for all of the people in the North Americas, Canada, the U.S., and Mexico of the world. He's responsible. He and his people are responsible for them. So I was their contact, and I was like, oh, okay, all right.
Did you recognize the family? Did you recognize, have a knowingness when you saw their faces?
No.
No?
No, I didn't. No. No, they didn't look anything like me.
I've heard so many times that they just are amazed and astounded by the variations in our emotional capabilities. To go from one point to another in just the blink of an eye, and that just perplexes them to no end.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear that someone else has heard about this vast range of emotional depth and breadth that we have.
Well, absolutely. It's what makes the human element so unique, Tolek.
Well, humans on this planet, yes.
Yes, on this planet, correct.
Yes. Yeah, because there are, based on what I've learned since 1993, there are the human form, otherwise known as humanoid, head, eyes, nose, ears, mouth, shoulders, torso, arms, legs. It's the most predominant organic form throughout the physical universe.
This vibratory rate.
You know, whether it's otter based or insectoid based or horse based or, you know, dwarf based, you know, and there are all sorts of shapes, forms, sizes. Sorry, for other people who have listened to me before, reptilian based, all sorts of forms, but humanoid is the most predominant.
You know what? A whole bunch of scientists plotted all these star systems across the galaxy. And this is like 20 years ago or 15 years ago. I just remember this from a long time ago. And they plotted them out. And what do you think was the shape when they condensed them? It was the shape of the human.
Really?
It was fascinating.
Yeah. I've never heard this.
I know. Wow. It was absolutely fascinating. I was like, wow. It was incredible. So, you know, when you go back to... Isn't that amazing?
Well,
you go back to the biblical...
That certainly leads credence to the concept of, and I'm going to say this purposely, small g, small o, small d.
Yeah, in my
creator, image. If you will, sub gods or creator gods or godlets, whatever term you want to use. But yeah, in my image, or wait, in our image.
In our image. Yeah, that's probably more appropriate.
Yeah.
Well,
right,
hey,
right.
I because wanted
it's,
to.
It's, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, we can jump around. It's all right.
I wanted to dive into some current topics because I know that's what people are itching to hear your feedback on. And I think one of the hottest things that's being rallied out there a lot is the whole concept of the Mandela effect. And I would love to hear your perspective on what you really think is going on there.
Okay. I will tell you first off that it's not something I've studied.
That's
but
okay.
It's something I've asked my people about. I came through an experience, an interview with Nancy Hopkins of Hattie Hottie Radio or something. She operates underneath J Perrone's Wolf Spirit Radio Network.
Oh, okay.
Managed
yes.
by Dave Corso. Dave Corso, right. And she brought up the topic, and I was like, what, huh? What are you talking about? It was the first time I'd ever heard about it. And this is like a month and a half ago. So essentially, yeah, I have a tough enough time keeping up my own day-to-day work, much less investigating, because I'm not an investigator. I'm not a conspiracy person. So now, having said that, let me tell you what my people said. What my people said is, it's another distraction.
Interesting.
It's another distraction. And it's another distraction because, yeah, sure, okay, let's say that there are beings that are changing some events that have changed the timelines somewhat.
Yes.
The events are so small and the changes are so unimportant that it's nothing you people should really be worrying about. It is simply a mental distraction. That's all it is.
Good. I just wanted to hear what you had to say about it. That's good.
That's what I felt when I was being asked about it.
Right.
Nancy, as an investigator, felt that it was worthwhile for her to dive into it and study this effect and look at all the aspects of it. And I was thinking, this is such a non-issue in the grand scheme of things. Why is she asking about this? So interestingly enough, my own people confirmed what I was thinking.
Good. Okay.
In their words, of course. But they just said, those changes are so small and so unimportant that it's a mental exercise. It's a distraction. Why are you paying attention to these things when there's far more important things you should be paying attention to?
Okay.
Kind of thing.
Okay. Well, how about I have so many questions here. I could just rally.
Dive. Just go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We'll
explore them.
So here's a question that I have about super soldier programs, because I know you talk a lot about that. What would you say is the percentage of the population that actually makes up these programs, these super soldier programs? And the reason I ask that before you even answer,
sure,
I do a lot of work, you know, and I end up diving into super soldier past lives and things like that with my alchemy work and my healing work. And I'm finding that it's more common than not. So that's all I want to say.
Yeah. I've been exposed to the topic of the super soldier program initially by speaking with Lorian Fenton.
Yes.
Who has a number of programs, right?
Yes, North I know Lorian. She's a nice lady. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, great lady. And bright, very, very bright woman. Here's what I've learned simply because I've asked the questions of my people and what they've told me. First of all, I find it interesting that I was in Colorado last month because, though people may or may not know it, there are a number of underground bases in Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
And in southern Colorado specifically, there is a base where they are essentially not only developing super soldiers, but they're cyborg super soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
And they are programmable.
Yes.
So right now, I'm not even talking about, you know, typical humans who get programmed. I'm talking about what's going on. It's dangerous. That aspect is dangerous, but to know that essentially there are scientists that are, you know, working on deep ops, deep black programs that include essentially the Borg.
Right.
it's pretty scary subject matter, at least from the perspective of the kind of harm they can inflict. I've talked to some people like Randy Kramer and a couple of others, and their experiences are real. And the sad part, I guess if you step back from the personalities and you look at what's going on, what's happened is there are people, both men and women, who either join the military or are drawn into the military, and they're programmed. And unfortunately, when the military or some three-letter agency gets done with them or they release them, they're never deprogrammed.
Correct.
That's the first thing.
Yes.
And the second thing is that many of those people act as what the military or the three-letter agencies would call sleepers. And now I'm going to touch on a topic, which I'm sure we're going to get to anyway, but it's all tied in, which is why I'm going to address it. I have somewhere in my computer, simply because I got curious one day, and it took me about 4.5 hours to list them all. I listed all of the mass killing events, some across the globe, but mostly here in this country, that began with Columbine, Colorado, and those children that were killed.
Yes.
Through, what, it's like 20 of them in the past year and a half alone?
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, you know, Oklahoma City, 9/11, Waco, Texas, these kind of events. These events primarily are set off, if you will, are triggered by individuals who've been programmed by covert, deep black ops.
Totally agree.
And they're, yeah, for quite a while, they're going about their lives partially functional, partially dysfunctional. At some moment, somebody decides it's time to awaken them to do a job. And that is the essence of what's going on and has been going on for the past, I guess since it's 1999, somebody corrected me recently. Said, "Oh, it's not the early 90s. It's 99 that Columbine first happened." So we've got like 16 years of events of innocent humans being killed. Now I'll go to the why. And if you want to jump in here any point in time with
corroborating
thoughts or information, feel free.
I would really like to add to this because
sure, please.
So the person that I'm referring to joined the Navy and decided to try out for the SEALs. And when they tried out for the SEALs, which was absolutely brutal, one day he was in classroom training, and two men in black came to his desk and said, "You need to come with us now." They took him into a room. Yeah, it had one chair, one table, and no windows. And they asked him to drink this drink. And he drank the drink, and the next thing he knows, he remembers lying on a table in a laboratory with a whole bunch of what he called electrode-type devices from head to toe. And he was completely,
and his life has never been the same
right.
since.
And he was completely naked. And he heard, he said, and it was the classic MyLab stuff. It was the gray, the Nordic, the reptilian in the room. And there were others, but that was the core. And they were trying to decide if they should take him out because they said, quote, he carried keys. And they are
He carried keys.
In
keys. Port. Oh, he knew too much.
Right.
He knew too much. Yeah.
So they were going to kill him, and the Nordic said, you know what, we can use him. Let's use him to our benefit, and let's just keep him, let's just put him to sleep. And through severe programming, they did that. Next thing he knows, he came to in the actual classroom with the teacher yelling at him because he wasn't paying attention. And that led to a life of absolute total horrific memories, relapses, addictions, et cetera, et cetera. To me, this is a classic representation of a lot of men and women out there right now who are starting to realize that something other than themselves is driving their own ship. And I mean, it's just, I don't know, so sad.
It is sad. And it's tragic that it happens. It's tragic for a few reasons. It's tragic because unless they're somehow able to detoxify their literal, electric spirit body, detox their emotional body, how do they somehow have a normal life?
It would take a complete detox program.
Of all of their bodies.
Even Randy Kramer will tell you this. They don't have a normal life. And
that's right.
I've interviewed a guy named Captain Jack, and he has a very fascinating story. I interviewed him a couple times because it was so fascinating, where he is a super soldier. And one of the things he told me off air that has always just rung a bell with me is he said, I just live day to day wondering how I'm going to feed myself, where I'm going to end up in the middle of the day. He says, literally, he just ends up in the middle of the desert. And he has no idea how he got there or what he did.
I got there.
That's their lives. And if they tell somebody, they're going to think they're nuts. So I just was curious if you knew what percentage. It just seems like there's a lot more than what we think.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know about percentage, but what I do know, and this is one of those I rarely say to people, you can take this to the bank. But I when I first started talking about this topic, I was approaching from people. I'd like you to consider the following. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm like, you can take this to the bank. Beginning with Columbine, Colorado, and many of these other events that have been triggered, that have horrifically ruined lives of people. Not only, of course, the people who are programmed and triggered to, if you will, execute these events, but all of the thousands of people have been taken out since then. Here's my summary. These are not random events.
Correct.
These are purposeful, programmed events to keep as much of the mass Western educated public in fear for as long as possible. Because as long as, to use those words, as long as the powers that be, which I call the powers that operate in the dark and the shadows, as long as they can control the dialogue and instill fear in the populace, they have control over the populace.
Yes.
And they've been running this program for probably a lot longer than 1999.
Yeah.
I can talk about why wars have been started as a topic, but these, like Orlando, Dallas, Texas, Atlanta, these are not random events. These are not people who just went, oh, I'm crazy one day. I think I'll go shoot people.
Yeah.
It's not what's happening. This is not about a created dialogue about how police and the Caucasians don't get along. It's not, those are all distractions.
Yes.
It's all, look over here, be distracted by this, get worried about this. Get worried you can't send your kids to the park on their bikes because they might get attacked. Get worried that it's not safe to go out in public to a basketball game or a football game because there might be an attack. Get worried because you can't send your kids to school because they might be shot. Think about all those different iterations of fear that are being fed into the public.
I can't agree with you more, and I think we're all really getting called right now on a big, big scale to once and for all really learn to step back into our own sovereignty and our own authority. And this is probably one of the biggest challenges right now is that the human race is so accustomed to being enslaved and frankly,
yes,
on the galactic and universal council level, this is just a huge issue to overcome the mind control of allowing ourselves to be, dismantled and what's that word? You know, we're just imbalanced. You know, we're just constantly not in our neutral, stable position.
Another gentleman who's had an incredible life and an incredible set of experiences, Alex Collier, said a long time ago, people, get off your knees.
Yes.
And he's being metaphorical. He's also being literal.
Yes.
He's like, do not ever bow down to anyone.
Yay, Alex.
We are. We were not born to be slaves.
No.
If you shift this dialogue for a moment, who are we? Well, we are actually not organic humans attempting to have a spiritual life. We are spiritual beings who come onto this planet many, many lifetimes to try to figure out what life is like, what organic life is like. We're here to learn, to grow, to evolve.
Yeah.
So it's all about the evolutionary process.
And it's also all about, don't you think it's also about, we came here to protect that embryonic race that is all over the galaxy. There's all kinds of younger races that deserve to be able to evolve in their own natural pace.
Kind of like as a an older brother or sister. I think that, okay, I'll continue to speak plainly. So here we go. Unfortunately, and this is only my opinion, unfortunately, I'm of the opinion that we as a human race on this planet, that there is, and I don't know what the exact number is, but there's a vast majority of people on this planet who are emotional children. They probably haven't grown much since high school or early college. There's certainly a large percentage of them that have not yet had the opportunity or are asked the questions, who am I really? What does this talk about spirituality or spiritual life really mean? Because a lot of people, if you ask them about their recent growth or their expansion, they go, oh, I've become much more spiritual. And so, and I've had these conversations with people. And say, oh, well, you know, tell me, what does that mean for you? What have you done? Well, I left my church a long time ago. I'm no longer, Methodist or Presbyterian or Catholic. And I'm getting a lot closer to God. Okay, well, that's good. But you learning about the core essence of who you are, where you originally came from, what are your most unique gifts and skills that you brought with you on this journey as a higher dimensional spiritual being living a human life? And that's when their eyes start to glaze over. No, I don't say it that way, but there's just so many people that think, and I'm not talking about, and I'm going to use terms that you're familiar with. I'm not talking about the fully conscious, awake, and aware crowd. I'm talking about the people who are just starting to wake up, and they equalize the term spirituality with getting closer to God without having the structure of religion.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know,
some of those people will break off and follow, I'm going to create a name, Maybelle Seashell, and she worships the 12 rays of the golden light of the higher dimensions of the angelic realm of the, and I'm like, it's another structure. What are you worshiping somebody else for? And somebody else's structure.
Correct.
You don't need all of that. And this, again, these are only my own learnings and my own opinions, but.
Right on. Nope. I'm on the same page with you. So let me ask you this, you know, because I have a very strong feeling that there is an enlightened group that I really focus on myself, because I feel that they will be the masters to assist this other group that you're discussing. Okay. That really has not had the capacity to really reach who they are or their spirituality or who are they serving? Where do they come from? That kind of thing. I mean, that there's still,
right.
Still such an immense
right.
amount of fear around that, you know?
Right. Right.
But I was going to ask you, you know, knowing the status of humanity as it is today, and knowing that, you know, we've talked about that there's 22 races and that there's all this attention being put on us and what we're going to do and how we're going to make decisions, do you not feel that there was a very specific group of us that were sent in very specifically to bring this transition forward, because that huge group of humanity is just not capable of pulling it off at this point?
Hmm. Interesting concept.
Just curious what you think.
Yeah, I'm certainly aware. I don't have the kind of details and knowledge that Alex Collier does regarding the 22 races, and his historical knowledge regarding that topic is very, very deep. He's very good at it. Mine's a bit different, but I'm clearly aware of the fact that from a biological perspective, you know, DNA, different humans, you know, there are at least six or seven different humanoid races that are living collectively on this planet. And there are probably a lot more. But I'm getting away from the topic. Here's what my people have told me. Sometime around 100,000 years ago, as we would calculate time, a number of us, you could call them star seeds, for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
We came in from other star systems, other dimensions. And the number that my people have told me is about 70, roughly 70-75% of the humans walking this planet today, that those souls are from different star systems.
Okay.
And the roughly 25 or 30% that are still here on Earth, they've been here on Earth reincarnating over and over and over and over and over again. And they go back to, they're like the pre-Lemurian people during the period of time when the planet was starting to fall in vibration. They've been here for a long, long time. So those of us that come from other star systems, it's my knowledge, we've been coming here for only about 100,000 years. I learned that myself, I've been coming here for 75,000 years and living a variety of different lives. Do I also think that there are individuals who choose to wake up because it's part of their own, if you will, part of their own blueprint? And they're here, you know, you, I, other people, they're here because they want to help. Oh, I think the answer is yes. I think there are going to be more and more people waking up to their cosmic star heritage, because everything that I've been told about who we truly are as energy beings, as beings of light, we're composed of the same material as the star systems and the nebulas. It's all the same material, maybe put together differently, but we are in fact great, great beings of light. As a matter of fact, I use this analogy. You could call it an oversoul. I happen to call it, by analogy, a 24-piece pizza, extra large. And there's about a piece to a piece and a third, roughly, at the most, out of your oversoul that animates the body that you're in. And moreover, there are other pieces or other slices of your oversoul that are having experiences around this universe simultaneously to what you're doing here right now. So Alexander is busy in a lot of places.
Yes.
Getting a lot done. And
that is for sure.
much like, to try to put a summary or in closing on this topic, just like each star, just like each planet has its own evolutionary blueprint, so does each soul in terms of what it is destined to learn. Mm-hmm. And so some are destined to become fully wide awake and to fully dive in and examine and explore the nature of who he or she is, what dimension he or she came from, what his or her gifts uniquely are, and what his or her gifts that he or she is meant to share with this world during his or her time here. Some people will never achieve that level of knowledge, of awareness, because they're just, for lack of better words, they're not wired that way.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not.
Very.
Some people like the social construct and the structure that a church provides and the rules that a church provides. Other people on the other end of the spectrum go, no way. If I want to talk to any of the sub gods or the creator, I'm going to do it on my own. You know, and there's that, hang on, that full spectrum.
Well,
so when we have conversations like this, and people like you and I say we and us, I eventually go, well, which we? Which
yes.
Us?
Yes, very true.
Which of us? Because we're all destined to have different experiences and walk these unique paths of learning that we're on.
Yeah. And this is such an amazing time to be going through our journey. And we need to continue to remind ourselves to really feel the honor and the appreciation of being here at this time. Because there's an awful lot of beings, I know they don't want to come here because it's, you know, Earth is kind of pegged as the hell of hells. But at the same time, what we're going to be gaining from this experience is like probably nothing we can even really wrap our heads around. You know, I'm just constantly told that from my
God.
And you know that's something I wanted to ask you. So when you're speaking to your council, what do you feel are their biggest concerns for the plight of humanity at this time?
Well, I'll be clear about who I'm talking to. When you ask this question, I want to clarify so that people understand. Have I been in contact with people from the Andromeda Council basically nonstop since September 10th of 2010? Answer is yes. Who are the people that I've been in contact with? Well, predominantly there's four or five of them. Mostly it's the gentleman who's the commander of the primary Andromeda Council biosphere, and other biospheres. His wife, who's known as Azar, and she's, if you will, the chief medical officer of all of the hospital, the medical ships. There are six of those. Vice Chairwoman Tanya, who's a non-voting management representative, of the council, and Ambassador Tonka. Now, these are people that all have important roles, but just for clarification, for clarity, the Andromeda Council as a body is an organization of 12 senior star systems and that have senior home worlds, and they function very much like a UN in deep space. And they have their own ambassadors and diplomats. So I'm not talking to any of those people. I'm talking to people that come from the planet Dakota, where my spirit essence was first birthed. Matter of fact, the gentleman who is the commander from the Primary Andromeda Council Biosphere, he's from Dakota. Ambassador Tonka, he's from Dakota. Azar, she's from Dakota. Vice Chairwoman Tanya, she's from the Mirox star system and the Andromeda constellation, planet Tyrael. And there are other people serving different roles that are from different places. So I'm not so much talking to the ambassadors and diplomats as I am talking to my own contact people who work for the council, who work on the council in a non-diplomatic capacity. So having cleared that up, their thoughts are, we of the Andromeda Council, also known as the Galactic Council, we are your family, your friends, your brothers and sisters of the cosmos. We are going to do our best to help free you so that you can become the sovereign cosmic citizens of this universe that you were meant to be. And that was the driving force between them stepping in and taking out the underground base in Colorado. Those are the people from the Sirius A star system. The people from the Procyon star system, planet Cana, they took out the underground base, the lattice network of underground cavities, if you will, west of Washington, D.C., and the 15 undersea bases, all reptilian run and operated. Thousands of reptilians now off planet.
Yes.
That's how they, predominantly, that's how they've helped by cleaning the rats out of the woodpile who controlled, manipulated, abused, eaten, created, continue to create fear, anguish, anxiety, and instill all of those in an unknowing public, unfortunately. And most people have no clue as to what has gone on over the years regarding this topic that we're discussing. None. So to get to the core of your question, these are the kinds of activities that, the different functioning bodies that represent the Andromeda Council, in this case, people from the Sirius A system, from the Procyon star system, have stepped in to clean out thousands of reptilians who've been running this planet for a long time. That's how they've helped. And what they wish for the human race is that it can next evolve unfettered, unmessed with.
Yes.
To live a more free, a more enlightened life, to be able to tap into our greatest potentials. So I'm not sure that exactly answers your question, but that's essentially what they've been doing and what they hope for us. And we're heading there. It's my understanding that this is not is this going to happen for the planet Earth? Might this happen? And that is not the case. Based on everything they've told me, this is going to happen for the planet Earth. Planet Earth will evolve, and she will become a higher dimensional world. And some of the beings and some of the people on this planet will evolve. Not everyone will choose to.
I have gotten the same information from my own guidance. And I work with a Syrian high commander. I also work with a Palladian commander and several other various, beings. I always want to say people, but that they correct me all the time. But, I can tell you that I just got back from being gone for 30 days, and we did a lot of planetary missions through that period of time in the location of Virginia and Maryland, and we got some serious stuff done. We got some serious victories. So, really good stuff.
I'm glad we're having this conversation, because you and I have never had this kind of conversation. So I'll ask, we're going to switch roles for a moment. Is the information and the kind of information that I'm providing, now the words may not be exact, but is the information that I've been sharing with your listeners and that you and I have been talking about, is it pretty consistent in terms of what you've been hearing from your higher dimensional people, your star people?
Yes, we're very much on the same page. And as I said in a prior interview, I'm still like on a kind of a gag order with some of the things that went down. But I can tell you that there were, since probably March of this year, there's been an extremely active campaign. I have been involved, as have been many other, I'm going to call them light workers, as well as the allied forces that we work with, and as well as the underground militia that we work with. There has been a huge amount of clearing. And what we continue to find, because what is fascinating is when I listen to you and you talk about the underground facilities that have been cleared and the reptilians that have been cleared, I get that that's true. What is very interesting is that these types of tunnel systems and these types of underground networks, I don't know how else to say it, they're multi-tiered.
Yes.
And yes. Because of that, we just cleared out a whole nother tier of that. So
yeah, and they are. I've used the words lattice, like the one west of Washington D.C. underground.
Yeah.
The one that was taken out in August of 2011. That was a lattice network.
Yes.
Of, I don't want to call them not quite bases, but facilities.
Yes.
That was well into Virginia.
Oh yeah, and they spread all the way across the world. I mean, depending on where they end up. I mean, they're very intricate. Very intricate.
There was one, I'm pretty sure, I don't have my notes in front of me because I did this work years ago, but the base that was off of the Nicobar Islands off of Greece.
Okay.
I have an underwater shot of it. It was as straight as a pencil.
Huh.
And I asked my people, the landmass upon which the space was sitting.
Oh.
And I asked my people, I said, I'm looking at this National Geographic undersea map. I said, this land formation is way too straight to be a natural formation.
Yes.
And they basically said, that's because it's not natural.
They
use their technology. Right. They use their technology, and then they cloak it, of course. That's why they had, I'm going to jump forward to the last base, the last undersea base that was taken out. And just to be clear, there were 15 Draco and Hydra reptilian major operational undersea bases. And the last one I reported on happened the last week of March, first week of April 2012. And it was directly due east of Washington, D.C. on the Atlantic shelf, right where, and they positioned the base right on the lip of the shelf before it dropped deep into the ocean. And it was so heavily cloaked, it took our people like 3 to 4 days to find this damn thing.
Wow. Interesting.
And I'll tell you categorically also that each time that they took out a base, before they did that, they communicated with, and you'll forgive me if I forget his name, but they communicated with the guy who they were using as their intelligence source. He's, just a quick reference, as we learned on the history of this planet, regarding the history of this planet, we had both swamp, if you will, swamp wandering, fern and algae eating, vegetarian dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they the plants. Well, we also had meat-eating dinosaurs, Velociraptors and Tyrannosaurus rexes and all those. So the reptilians we were dealing with were meat-eating.
Yes.
Draco and otherwise. Well, there's an individual who is part of, if you will, vegetarian reptilian race. They're ancient. They're wise. I wouldn't call them warm, but they're very, very intelligent. And they're very peaceful. And this guy was providing intelligence information to our people so that we could find these different undersea bases. And pretty much it's because of his help our people were able to find these bases. And I just really learned recently, I've asked, I said, you know, it seems that the people in the Procyon system did a lot of the work. And my people said, yes, they did, because they originated this high frequency and compact, low resonating thumping technology. And they shared it with a number of the members of the council.
Mm.
And I've learned that it's like eight or nine out of 12 now have this technology.
Mm.
So we're talking about people from Antares, M103, Procyon, Vega, Capella, Polaris, Sirius A.
Wow.
They all have this technology. So, and each one of these members of the Galactic Council, as they're known in deep space, they have their own councils. They have their own representative councils. So this, what I'm learning is that this thing called the Andromeda Council, or otherwise known as the Galactic Council, it's like sort of like the mother council of all the councils.
Yes. I just wanted to say the Procyon, I'm going to call them units that have arrived here. From what I've been told, we would not be where we are today without them.
That's correct. Yeah. Those are the guys that took out most of those 15 bases. And essentially, their senior home world, known as Planet Kaena, K-E-E-N-A, they had been subjugated by the reptilians for years, and they got to a point where, like, we cannot live like this anymore.
Right.
We must free ourselves. And they came to learn which frequencies would disable reptilian minds, you know, would so mess with them that would either destroy the reptilian mind or frequency wise just scramble it completely.
And
they
that's already
out that frequency.
Yeah, that's already
correct.
Happening. I'm glad you brought that up, because I was doing some work with my fellow healer, Jeff Godfrey, and he was able to download specific frequencies in order to do so. And he actually saw it right in front of his, you know, I mean, I'm basically saying on the plane, he actually saw the way it interacted with their bodies.
I'm really happy to hear this information and have what I've learned be confirmed. It's always great when people I've never had a conversation with before of this kind of depth, that they come forward with third parties.
Yes, I know. Don't you love confirmation?
It's great.
Confirmation's always
so
the key. Hey, I want to...
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yes.
Quickly diverting over to a subject near and dear to my heart. How are you feeling? What are you hearing from your contacts regarding the Atlantean grid system? How is that impacting where we are right now? What do you think?
Energetically, I had a really difficult week. Now, it's rare for me to have, you know, because of, you know, of this conference I'm planning, that kind of an event takes a lot of attention, a lot of focus, and a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
The week I had this week was almost, it almost felt like something was pushing a compression wave down on top of me.
Yes.
And it felt like there were these compression wave frequencies that were trying to mess with me getting my work done. And I've talked to a few other people, and they've used different words to describe this feeling. And we're not talking about the new positive energies that we're coming into in the solar system. No. These are the bad guys purposefully putting out compression waves to mess with people.
Yes.
That's what I felt this week. I'd heard other people describe in far worse terms what they were going through. Because, of course, some people are more sensitive to these energies. Some other people are less sensitive. But that's what I felt this week. And specifically this week. Not before that.
Interesting. I got to tell you, what I have seen etherically is this very thick kind of brownish grayish wall that has been sent out and targeting the enlightened community. And everybody that I have spoken to practically has felt that in one way, shape, or form, they have felt thwarted, lethargic, confused,
like frustrated,
confused about yeah. Where am I going? Why am I even here? Oh, I might as well just give it up. There was this.
I've had just like brief moments of that, and that's not me. That's not
me
the way
neither.
I'm wired.
Me neither
at all. But this week, yeah, I'm like, oh man, it's like every moment was push through. I know what I'm doing. This is the right thing. Push through.
Yes.
Why am I doing this? I'm like, and that's not how I function.
And the good news the good news is it's done. It's already been counteracted.
Yeah. I'm glad to bring this up because I don't feel it today.
Right.
That heavy, oppressive wave, I do not feel today at all.
And
so good work. whoever did the work, good work.
Well, and I just want to take my hat off to, you know, I can't help myself, but I love my audience and all those that are out there, even if you're not my audience, who are doing this work. My heart extends out to yours for the immense amount of work that's being done by each and every one of us, whether we're conscious of it or not, you know, during the dream time state or actually, you know, during covert etheric operations. I mean, we could not be where we are today without the immense amount of tenacity and perseverance. Those are the two things that have kept us going, you know? But,
yeah, we are as a world that is full of mostly sentient life forms. Awake and aware is a different story altogether, but mostly sentient life forms. We are destined to become better than we are. We are destined to evolve.
Right.
As I mentioned earlier, every star, and if this is, I mean, literal, every star, every planet, it not only has its own evolutionary blueprint, which is represented by mathematics and sacred geometry, but it's also represented by, and I'll create a number, let's call it Venus. Venus's digital signature, if you will, is like 995122477761.
Oh my God.
Well, Saturn, Saturn is probably like 514771277766. Each planet, each star has its own frequency signature. Now I'm going to bring it to a finite life form. Each of our souls, not the human body that we wear as an avatar, but each of our souls also has a unique digital signature, also known as maybe a unique frequency signature.
Yes. Yes.
Alexandra may be 14451592, but make no mistake, your people can find you wherever you are because they can pick up your digital frequency signature, your unique signature. That's the only way I can say it.
Yeah.
Same thing with me. My people knew exactly where I was in Colorado the whole time I was there because all I had to do was, where's Cholik? Oh, yeah. They just tune in. There I am. And that's the case for every single soul on this planet.
Yes.
Everyone.
And I'm working with awesome healing technologies that are based exactly on that premise. So that every dis-ease, every manifestation that is not maintaining us in a state of balance, each of them has its own energy frequency and its own signature.
That's right.
Its own algorithmic code or whatever. Yes. Yeah.
Color, sound, light, tones.
Yes, yes, definitely.
All of those.
Hey, yeah. Question.
Yeah.
Another question.
Yes, yes.
So what are you feeling and what have you received from, you know, your guides regarding the whole situation with Germany? You know, you've got Angela Merkel. She's taken a lot of heat because she's had an open door policy on immigration because of the fiasco over there. And now she's pretty much telling everybody, I don't want to be in the middle of you decimating my country when you want to play war. What are you hearing as far as as Germany goes? And the reason I ask about Germany is I've been told it is one of the pivotal countries.
Pivotal, right. Right. Yeah, because they're standing their ground and we're saying, hey, we have a right to our sovereignty.
Right.
And you're not going to stomp on it.
Right.
I mean this very sincerely, generally, they do not comment on the political affairs choices of Earth humans. They just don't. They don't. They don't because, and here's the way it works. If we allowed ourselves to be, and I'm pausing because I'm looking for the right word, if we allowed ourselves to be influenced by either a higher dimensional race or even a more higher evolved organic race, and we followed the lead of that race, and something went wrong down the road, the first thing we could do is go, hey, you told us to go there.
Yes.
That was your idea.
Yes. Instead of it coming from us.
Right. Instead of it coming from us. And it would be easy. You know, I've seen so many occasions of Earth humans who are not yet emotionally balanced to just point the finger. It's like, I didn't do it. You did it. You know, I followed your advice instead of taking responsibility. So, they, in terms of the members of the Galactic Council, the Andromeda Council, they will not interfere in that way. They will not share their thoughts or their opinions with what Earth human governments or leaders choose to do. Our business is our business.
Right, right. Okay.
It just is.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, I'm
impressed. Well, so what do you feel? I mean, Sheldon Neidel, as you know, has a very prominent newsletter that goes out weekly. And one of the statements in that newsletter was the dark has been neutralized. What are your thoughts on that?
Well...
the pause was which, classic.
which dark? How much dark? You know, as long as this planet is still organic, we still have, you know, what people call good and bad, or you know, malevolent, malevolent, and the terms go on and on. You know, we're still living on this organic world. We're still living with people who are either through past life stuff they brought forward or stuff in their own lives, people that are deranged, people that are sick.
Yes.
There are still people being murdered. There are still sleepers being triggered to do malicious, violent things. So what part of the dark has been eliminated?
Well, that's why I threw that out there to you. I wanted to see how you respond.
I mean, you know, but you know, I'm not at all trying to be flip. It's just that we still live in this very organic world with people that are making conscious choices and other people that aren't making conscious choices. People are, hang on.
Okay.
Some guy with holly headers on his Mustang. And people who, people who are consciously making decisions and people who are unconsciously making decisions. All that leads to good and bad decisions, and the bad ones can certainly be qualified as dark. And even in the lower strata of the fourth dimension, you still have malevolent, shape-shifting energy into organic reptilians who are bad news because they think eating humans is just like humans eating a cow. It's no different.
Totally.
You know, I mean, so there's certainly a segment of the population that believes that once we make this higher dimensional shift, that all of our problems and all of our are all going to disappear, and that we don't have to take responsibility for what's going to happen.
No.
Wrong.
Yeah. Not even close.
Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. I think certainly I've got a really good handle on what goes on in the fourth and the fifth. I can't speak from any point of knowledge or experience about the sixth and above. Now, having said that, I think that it's probably likely that life forms that exist in the higher dimensions or the higher realms, six, seven, eight, the closer they get to Creator, the more love there is, because you're talking about a higher frequency and a higher vibration. And the higher the vibration, the closer you get to, I guess, what we would call pure love.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the lower fourth and in the third, it's still a mess, and it's going to be a mess for a while.
Yeah. And you know, actually, the fact that we've transitioned into the fourth, that's brought in a lot of very intense darkness that the light workers have had to contend with, because these are actually more skilled dark beings than what we're
right.
in the third dimension.
Yeah. My understanding is, if I understand what you're saying, it's that we've tapped into fourth dimensional consciousness.
Right.
Because we're still 3D organic beings living on this 3D organic world.
Yes.
Mark Kimmel speaks of fourth dimensional consciousness the way you do, which is about the consciousness. And I choose to talk about in terms of physicality.
Yeah.
We're still in 3D physicality.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, the closer, and that's what, sorry to go here, but it will at least inform and maybe enlighten some people. That's what all of these terror attacks are about. The movie by Tom Cruise is a great actor. He's done his thing. But the movie by Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, Eyes Wide Shut, the whole concept of rituals is literally all about the creation of fear and terror. Now, right now, I'm not at all trying to scare people. What I'm trying to do is enlighten them in terms of what is going on.
Yes.
And when fear and anxiety and confusion are ramped up in the human form, it puts out chemicals. And in an energetic sense, it puts out a low form of negative energy. Well, literally, the reptilians feed on this low form of negative energy. When they manifest organic bodies, they thrive off of the chemicals that are put out when humans get into flight or fight mode, because they're ramped up in the human body.
Yeah.
And so now people can understand, if they step back, I know this is a brief history lesson, but if they step back to thousands of years ago, they'll understand why we have had wars on this planet for so long. It's all about feeding the beast.
Yes, it is.
And again, I'm saying this stuff out loud, not to put people in a place of fear, but just simply give them information and say, this is why we have wars. This is why you see fearful programming on television. Why? Because they want to perpetuate the fear and control so that their masters can eat as much as possible. Now, what's going on that you're aware, keenly aware of, is because of the many reptilian underground bases and the many undersea bases and the thousands of reptilians that are no longer on planet, there are probably 120 reptilians left on this world. About 70 of them are pure reptilians. They're deep, deep, deep underground. The other 50 or so are hybrids. That's all that's left out of tens of thousands.
Oh, yeah.
And so to step into the Corey Good arena, the reason for all the conflicts going on in the SSP, Secret Space Program, is because all of the different lieutenants and captains and colonels that were reporting to the reptilian general masters, all those generals are gone. They're literally gone off planet. So there's a power vacuum.
Yes.
And all these lieutenants and colonels are fighting among each other and their factions. That's what's going on.
Yes.
On this planet and off planet in space.
It is. It's truly like a, it's become more of a, I'm going to say extraterrestrial and terrestrial.
Yes.
You know, type battle of who's going to dominate which country, which continent,
right,
which race.
Right.
That's where we're at very heavily.
Right.
And, you know,
and it's less of a breakaway civilization and more of, well, one group has decided to work this way. Another group has decided that these resources are more important. And another group decided that Mars is more important to work with the remaining people that are there. And so they're all fighting over the same small pool of resources.
Yes, that's so true.
Including human resources on this planet.
And I love when you said it's all about feeding the beast. If every single person questioned their actions, their words, their thoughts, and their feelings, and said, is this feeding the beast?
Wow.
Can you imagine how much we would change our, I mean, seriously, you know, just when I heard you say that, I was like, bing.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be kind of like, okay, if you started the top down and you unplugged all of the people working for the big corporations. And my buddy Mark Kimmel showed me a chart one time. He had done this work. He said, look at this. And he showed all of these dots on a page that were all connecting to each other. And ultimately, all of these dots, which represent, I won't call them tiny companies, but small corporations, medium corporations, big corporations, and then the biggest of the big corporations. Ultimately, they all connected to like six or seven top global corporations.
Isn't that amazing? It's so
all,
true.
All of them.
Yeah.
All of them. Now, it's worse than that. Now we'll talk about finance, global banking. All of the major global banks, including the private Swiss banks, each of those board members sit on each other's boards that are making individually and collaboratively the best decisions for their own banks. They're all essentially all kissing cousins.
Yeah.
They all sit on each other's boards. So it's actually like working for the same bank. That has,
and actually, they literally are
different branches.
You know, they're literally kissing cousins.
Yes, they are, actually. And that's that whole conversation about the royalty in Europe. It's like, geez, you know, the whole time that World War II was going on, people forgot to remember that the French have married the English for years, and the English have married the Germans for the years, and the people that they call Dutch, the correct spelling is D-E-U-T-C-H. They're German. They moved to the Netherlands, out there. Europe is all mostly related.
Oh,
they're all killing each other's cousins and brothers and sisters. I mean,
I don't know if people remember this, but during the reign of Queen Victoria, she was very, let's just say, very blatant in her dissatisfaction and lack of desire to birth and have children. She wrote copious numbers of journals, supposedly, about how she couldn't stand motherhood, and yet she had oodles of children. And what is interesting is that every one of her children were married off into another major country.
That's right.
Hello.
Got to keep that lattice network going. Of
exactly.
You know, the whole blue blood thing and what blue bloods really mean. And you know, I'm please understand, I'm not trying to bore you or bore any of our people listening with with history lessons. But, you know, if people gain a new perspective from this context that we were talking about, and you can, if they back away far enough, they can go, has this what's been going on for thousands of years? How is it that we did not see this?
Yes.
And now I'll jump to, now I jump to another topic near and dear to my soul. Now I was erroneously so a public, I was a political science and public administration major in university. And that never went anywhere once I got into the, you know, the real world. But having said that, in 1990, and I, first of all, just to clarify for anybody listening, I never worked in government, ever. It okay. didn't happen. In 1994-ish, 93-ish, something like that, I've been playing tennis my whole adult life. It's a game that I love and enjoy. It's a passion of mine. I get great exercise and camaraderie with the guys I play with. So I'm living in Tucson. I'm playing at the Oro Valley Tennis Club on Oracle Road, just north of River Road on Oracle. And interestingly, they actually moved to Oracle Road in Tucson. I thought about that. I'm like, In any case, there was a break in tennis sets, and I was playing with a bunch of guys. One of them, actually, his name was Michael, and he worked for the astronomy department. They was working on the Mars project at the time. And another one of these gentlemen, and I'm gonna protect him because I'm pretty sure he's still alive, or he's like 90 now, but I want to protect his family. Originally from Massachusetts, he was with the State Department during the Vietnam War era. And as we take breaks during games and sets, we talk about different topics, and somehow we got into government. And he said my first name, and he said, with his Massachusetts accent, he said, "Do you realize that Jack Kennedy, and they murdered him, Jack Kennedy was our last freely elected president. Every president, beginning with Johnson," and you should have seen a sneer in his face when he said it, "every other president since Johnson has been appointed through today." Now that was either the spring of 93 or 94.
Not amazing.
A man with the State Department who knew at the high level of the State Department, who was traveling between this country and Vietnam, who knew what was going on, these words came out of his mouth. I was livid when I heard that.
Yeah.
As somebody who had an interest in what I thought was the goodness and the nobility of public service, I was livid to hear that every president since the assassination of John F. Kennedy has been appointed, including all the Bushes, including the guy who sits in the seat today, Obama. That means that every single election since JFK has been a farce. It's been a stage play, including this one, which means it's a waste of Americans' energy, of their time, of their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
If every single American knew that fact, there just might be a nice little evolution, a big style evolution happening because of the reality of that information.
And
it still makes me angry to no end that's the truth.
And Tolik, think about the fact that just the energetic part of the presidential elections, it's just a loop. You know, it's just, okay.
That's right.
It's just one year, it's the Democrat, you know, one presidential race is the Democratic Party. The next presidential race is the Republican Party. Neither one of them are anything different than the other. They're all in the same game. They all have the same intention and the same agenda. And we always right. end up with the same exact solution, which is a dissolution for the American people as well as people around the world.
And it's dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine who's far smarter than I am, he said, he's like, "Oh, yeah." He said, "It's two sides of the same coin."
Yeah, it is. It really is.
And then I thought, that's like, well, that's like Soviet Russia, but times two. So mm-hmm. instead of having the party, you have two parties telling you what to do. or telling you how to think, or telling you what issues you should consider.
You know,
over and over again. Like, I know this is a terrestrial issue and it's not a cosmic issue, but
no, but it's very poignant. And you know, I actually have said to people, if you look back at all that you were taught in high school, for example, and you look back to the days when you were in the classroom and you were hearing all the warmongering about Russia and Germany. And in fact,
that's right.
We are German. We our government
in some ways
is compiled of those very same people that did all of the experimentation. It's being done on a minute-by-minute basis below our feet. You know,
they brought a lot of the German scientists
absolutely
and into all the three-letter programs
exactly, and they've penetrated all of our government agencies, all of our institutions. I mean, that whole Nazism philosophy is everywhere. It's just maybe not overt, but it's pretty easy to find.
It's not self-evident because people don't think of us, you know. Chevrolet, General Motors, grandmother, apple pie in the USA, that whole God country. And guys, I'm going to go fight for my country. I'm going to go defend democracy. I'm going to go protect people across the world. And God bless men and women that do that. But is that really why they're doing it? I mean, do they really know what's going on? I know some people who have come out and it's not what they thought.
No. And I'm going to respond to that because I'm a military brat. My dad was an officer in the Air Force. He was a fighter pilot and I have a lot of military in my family. I married somebody that was in the military. I mean, my whole point is it's a rare moment to meet someone who joined the military where they did not honestly believe that they were going to protect the citizenry and the rights of humanity. However, they're oblivious to the true agenda.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. You said that really well. They don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And I said this to Corey one time when he was talking about some of the things he knew. And I said, but Corey, dude, you're on need to know. You're still segmented. There's a whole bunch of things that you don't know that's going on levels above you.
Yes.
He went, oh yeah, you're right.
Oh yeah. That's the military way.
Yep.
You know, it's the military
way. And he only knows what they're going. He only knows what they're going to tell him.
Yes, that's very true. And I think probably it's one of the most horrific things you could do to an individual is to send them out to so-called create bloodshed and tell them that they're doing it for a specific cause that they find noble, only to find out that it was all complete, total fallacy and lie. So you've got that whole entire layer of the population that is really and burnt, you know, very burned and very in pain.
Vietnam, Gulf War I, Gulf War II, Iraq,
yes,
Afghanistan, all lies.
Yeah, it's all lies.
That's the disturbing part, is that it's all lies.
Well, hey, World War II. How did World War II start? You know, Pearl Harbor, that was a lie. For us, the United States.
Yeah, and apparently our people knew days ahead of time.
Yes.
That this Japanese fleet was coming across the ocean.
Yep.
And did nothing.
So, hey, not to change the subject, but we've got about 15, 20 minutes left, and I want to ask you this question about what is your perception on, you know, how everybody's talking about ascension and, you know, everything's all about the ascension and the body and how it's changing and everything else. What about descension spiritually? Can you comment on that?
Okay. I'm gonna pick up a piece from the last conversation and wrap it up from my perspective, and then I'm gonna answer your question. So here we go.
You feel
I believe I never want to leave something hanging unfinished, so to speak.
That's okay.
I humbly believe that what will happen in the coming days and months as certain changes of large scale magnitude happen on this planet and also happen to the shores of this country, that there will be a period in time when individual people in groups realize that the government can't help them.
Yeah.
Now, they've already screwed up their ability to help with what happened in New Orleans and Katrina. Now, if they couldn't handle and help with Katrina, what's coming, they're sure as hell not going to be able to help. And I think at that moment, people will start to realize the truth of how much they're going to need to rely on themselves, their friends, their family members. I think that what you will see is a degradation of the influence and power hold of the large-scale corporations and large government, and a far more reliance on people, friends, family, people in your immediate community where you live, as the transition of this world to become a higher dimensional one continues. And it'll get more interesting and more dynamic as things go on.
Yes. Yes. Very true.
Not yet. Not less so.
It's going to be a very spontaneous lesson on how to all cooperate.
Yes. Yes. And as to degradation, if you will, I choose to use the words higher dimensional shift, to quote Alex Collier, upliftment, transformational shift. I stay away from the word ascension because, at least for me, it has a lot of religious connotations. So having said that,
okay.
Let me change those words. I have been told by my contact people that the transformation of this world will happen because of a number of, I call them what's, not when's, because none of this is dependent on when. It's cosmic events that happen in space that influence what's happening with our world. It's cosmic events that are happening that will actually change the face of this planet. It is when the peak of human consciousness literally happens, where in this 3D organic form, we become as awake and aware as possible. And all that means, that's when the transformational shift of this world will happen. It and the beings who choose to stay here will become essentially mid-level and a little bit higher, 4D beings. The whole planet is going to go 4D. And it'll have, of course, there are going to be some pockets of higher resonance as well, if you will, 5D. I don't see de-evolution at all happening. I've not heard of that at all. Well, essentially what will happen is, for those people who are, if you will, 3D organic people like you and I are today, but maybe that don't have this knowledge that you and I do, let's call them, Steve and Susan, and they've got kids, and they're good people, they're nice people, and they treat each other with love and kindness and their friends and their family in the same way. If they happen to be on planet when the shift of this world happens, they're going to become fourth dimensional beings simply because of the nature of who they are. Conversely, people who are liars and cheats and murderers and manipulators and all of the worst of society, their vibrational frequency will be such that if they are 3D and lower 4D, as you and I have talked about, when this planet, if you will, in the blink of an eye or a snap of a finger, becomes mid-level 4D and higher, those 3D and low-level 4D people will not, their frequencies will not be able to tolerate the higher frequency of this new higher dimensional world. they will simply dissipate and they will incarnate on some other 3D world somewhere else. Because this world will no longer be 3D. It'll be mid to upper level 40. That's what I've been told. Not de-evolution, just a difference of choice.
Right.
They'll have to go somewhere else.
Well, the reason, I use the word descension, not degradation. Not de-evolution. And the reason I pose that question to you is because what we perceive as ascension, where it's an upliftment, it is a much more comprehensive connection. It's a removal of the valley. Right.
Right. To the higher dimensions, to source, certainly.
Right. But at the same time, we're actually descending into our own beingness and recognizing that the power and the divinity is from within.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's one thing for you and I to have a conversation like this, to share notes, to collaborate, to have these aha moments of, wow, we are individually and collectively learning some of the same information. Now, it's a completely different story, if you will, for me to try and rely on Alexander Meador as my foundation of strength. If I were to turn to you to be my pillar of strength, my emotional foundation, my security. That's not right. That's each of us has the ability to be a self-realized, completely sentient being, awake and aware of all of our gifts and our skills. Now, it's almost possible to do it on this planet, almost, but it's a tough road. It takes, as you know, a lot of dedication and a lot of commitment to look internally and get rid of, if you will, transmute all of the layers and all of the years of pain, of hurt, all the experiences that we've had that we carry. It takes a conscious commitment to face that stuff, deal with it, and release it.
Very true.
And releasing it. And part of the dealing with it is saying, I'm okay. I'm going to be okay. I may not like all the decisions I've made in the past, but I got to love myself, because if I'm going to evolve, I'm going to have to forgive myself and love myself in order to become a better person for me. And then as a result of doing that, then I'll become a better person for everybody else I interact with.
That is so true. And, you know, self-forgiveness, at least in my line of work, it is the core,
the number one problem
for people is to forgive yourself from all of those lifetimes and all of those oaths, contracts, agreements that you've taken that you were taking. Most of the time we took them, at least in the very beginning of our soul's path, took them because we were either under duress, feeling threatened, or feeling that those that we loved were being threatened. And so don't feel like you're alone. That's my whole thing, is like when you're going into that whole aspect of I just need to be okay with myself, understand that all the healing and all the work that you do on yourself is truly not being ignored. It's affecting the greater tapestry of humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. And people, for those people who know what we're talking about, who've chosen to look internally and go through these changes, you'll notice that it's likely some of your friends will fall by the wayside, or you'll choose to step out of their lives and make different choices for yourself. You will start to choose people who resonate, who live the same kind of life that you do, who make the same kind of decisions that you do, who treat people the same way you do.
Very true.
Because, as you know, like attracts light, for the most part.
Yes. Well,
so it's an amazing journey that we're living.
It is, isn't it? And you know what? I am just so honored to finally connect with you. I mean, you and I have crossed paths on the internet. I don't know how many copious amounts of time, but I want everyone to know that one of the main reasons that Tolik and I are speaking is because of Torrey Smith and the fact that he did a tribute to him, as did I. And what that led to was a conversation between he and me. And I want everyone to be aware that he is throwing this 2016 Transformational Shift Conference. It's going to be on October 21st, 22nd, and 23rd at the DoubleTree Hilton in Tucson, Arizona. He's going to have an amazing, just amazing group of speakers and all kinds of cool stuff. Their tickets are still available, very, very reasonable. And he has invited me to come on one of the panels one of those nights, as well as oversee one.
And you can participate in both if you'd like. It's so important. At least I feel it's important that people like yourself have an opportunity to be heard, and that within the context of a speaker group or a panel discussion, that's 2 hours each day that audience members will be able to say, "Hey, I've got some important questions. You know, can you address these questions? Can you give us some answers?" It's just a great way to have the audience members interact with the speakers in a really informal setting.
And that I like the most. I love the fact that you went there, where it's like really casual. And if anybody wants to check this out, which I can't imagine anybody not wanting to, it's at transformationalshiftevents.com. And you can get all the information there. And as always, I think everyone is well aware of Tolik's website, which is AndromedaCouncil.com, to follow his goings-ons and his travels and his – you're doing a plethora of radio shows.
Well, I have some free time. Earlier in the year, the first 3 months of this year, the end of last year, first 3 months of this year, I spent a lot of time taking care of mom. She's 85.
Aww.
And that took a lot of my time. Mom's in the Northeast right now. I'll get to see mom in December again, so we'll go through another period. But hey, you know, oldest son, single. No attachments, no kids. You know, all my siblings, they all have complications in their lives. So I'm happy to do it. You know, mom put up with me when I was a bratty young kid and a teenager. So this is payback time. I'm happy to do it. I really am.
Well, good for you.
One last comment on the conference, if I may.
Yeah, please.
I want to say everybody, I can't tell you how blessed I feel that the Native American people who will be speakers for us will be bringing their knowledge and sharing it with us as, if you will, you know, Western educated society, because for them, their Wichapi Oyate, their star people, their star ancestors, that's part of their heritage. It's something they talk about in their stories as they grow up.
Yeah.
So they have a unique perspective that we don't have. And we'll have at least 3 or 4 Native American people who are very wise sharing what they've learned with us. And so I feel blessed that they've said yes and they'll be part of this whole experience.
Yeah, and you know, I want everyone to know, I mean, please, please try to come. You'll be able to meet me. You'll be able to meet Tolik.
Yes.
I guess Simon Parks will be on Skype. We have Atasha Tashina, Jim Nichols, who I've interviewed several times, Stuart Swerdlow, Mark Kimmel. I mean, the list goes on. And what I really loved about your conference was that intermixing of the galactic kind of influence with the Star Nations and the American Indian.
Yes, and I've also consciously chosen to have a good balance of men and women.
Good.
You'll see it's not an all male panel at all.
Yay!
There's a really good balance of men and women. And you know, this is, as you know, you'd speak with Laura Eisenhower or anybody else, this is the energetic frequency that we're coming into.
I know.
The frequency of relying on your intuition and your heart. And those are, as we in society would today, more decidedly feminine traits. Not really, but so we, you know, we have a lot to learn. We as men have a lot to learn. And I'll tell you, the women I've met, like yourself, gifted, gifted is, it does not describe the kind of capabilities that you typically have over us as men. So I'm blessed. I'm blessed not only to have Native Americans, but Native American women who will be contributing to this conference. It's going to be unique. I've been told by my people upstairs, this is truly going to be a pivotal event. That was sort of the essence of the word that they used, was pivotal, because of the nature of the composition of the people speaking.
I am so honored to be able to attend. Yeah. And it was all divinely guided. And I know, by the way, Torrey Smith was involved in this.
yes, and he's fine. His soul essence is...
He's doing great. He's doing great.
Quite well, yes.
Yes, he's doing really, really well now, definitely. But I want everyone to check out the website again. I'm going to give it to you one more time. It's transformationalshiftevents.com. We will have a link up on the website so that people can access that. And
if they go to the conferences and events page, everything's there.
Perfect.
Everything is there for people to read in terms of details.
Yeah. So, and it's going to be in October. And so if you're getting too chilly in any other part of the United States, come on down to Tucson.
perfect. Yeah, yeah. 80, 82 degrees, sunny blue skies, very comfortable.
Yeah, and, really nice.
For the people that don't know, Tucson has very unique spiritual energy.
Yes.
I was told by a spiritual master one time that there is, in fact, a higher dimensional spiritual retreat about 10 miles in diameter that sits right over Tucson.
Ooh.
And that's one of the reasons that it has the energy it does. Yeah.
Well, you know, it has to be one of the reasons you got called there, huh? So
probably,
you know, I mean, there's no happenstance.
That's another story.
On that one, that's for sure.
No. And I moved into a condo on Oracle Road.
Okay. Oh, God.
And I was clueless. Yeah, I had no idea back then.
Okay.
Well, Alexandra, thank you. Thank you so much. You've been very gracious. I appreciate it.
Hang on one second. I'm going to tie up the interview
Sure.
I just want to say goodbye to you. So thanks, everyone. Lots of love to all of those that have assisted Galactic Connection. Continue to check us out. We are the world-renowned leader for the implant removal process, especially for the healing community. We are there to support you. And check out some of our new services, because we've got all kinds of new stuff coming. I know I keep saying that, but you know, when you're low of human resources and financial resources, you just keep putting it out there, right?
And it's all on your shoulders. It's all on your shoulders. I know.
So anyway, lots of love, and I hope you all enjoyed this. I'm sure Tolik and I will be able to do this again in the near future. Take care and have a wonderful rest of your week. Lots of love.